We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
As much as I am partial to Led Zeppelin, I think we might need a different song here. We got infrastructure, passed in the house, time for build back better, that's what I'm about. So Mr. President, I don't even know how we found this song, Dave. My favorite part is at the end, so I have to let it play just a little bit through because, hang on, here we go. And it's all paid for. Oh yeah, it's all paid for. Michael Goodwin is with me from the New York Post this afternoon. Have you heard that gem of a tune, Michael, or was I the first one to play it to you?
You're first. I'm slow on these things, so you're way out front, Mark.
It's a very special song, and I love the part. And the president even said it yesterday. They keep saying that this stuff is paid for, even though it's been proven at this point that it's not paid for, right?
Well, sure. The CBO estimated, $375 billion, I think, going straight to the deficit over the 10-year life of it. So, and that's without even the final horse trading that would be involved in the tax program. I mean, there's all kinds of things in there that do not have support in the Senate, and it would have to go back to the House. So it's it's a moving target to even describe it.
You know, I think you would agree with this, but we are given, and I think over the course of time, we're given such a disservice from the media when it comes to understanding pieces of legislation, because most people have no idea, unless you sort of did a little research, what was in that infrastructure bill. Hell, I think the people who voted for it don't even know. Same thing with this. There are things about this particular bill, I would argue, $500 billion for climate change, that should be vetted a little bit in public, that should be discussed, that should be debated, but we don't get any of that, do we, Michael?
No, it's just simply this is what we're doing, and you know the larger argument, of course, is this is a pastiche of all the Democratic wish list that couldn't get into the infrastructure bill. So this is pretty much everything left over. This is the bill that Bernie Sanders wrote, and then he complains that it was already a compromise when he submitted it at $3.5 trillion. And that, he says, was a compromise. And now, of course, it's down further. So what you have really is just Democrats bidding against each other to try to get 50 votes in the Senate.
So I've followed politics for a long time. You've followed politics for a long time. I'm even surprised at the level of cratering that continues to occur in this White House. It really is quite stunning when you look at it. I mean, the poll numbers are reflecting this, but every time you think maybe they can turn things in another direction, they stumble again. It's entertaining because on the other side, as you are, I'm encouraged by it, but I'm really kind of amazed at how bad it is. Are you?
Yes, I think you've said it right there. I mean, how bad it is sort of, I think, beyond what anyone could have predicted. And I think that apart from any problems of his fitness that the president himself has, I think it's perhaps not a surprise, but it's still shocking the way the vice president has come up short in virtually every aspect of her responsibilities. I mean, she's given new meaning to standing by.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there is, as I said, this fight among the Democrats themselves. I mean, if they made a bill that was reasonably attractive, as they did with the infrastructure bill, despite its flaws, then you could say, well, you know, we're not going to get 100 votes in the Senate, but we're going to find some Republicans who want to vote with us on this. But it's only now an issue of can they hold the Democrats? I mean, that is almost by definition bad management, bad leadership, bad control of your party. I mean, Joe Biden is the leader of the Democratic Party, and no one would argue that he's setting the pace. This is something that's strung together to try to please every constituent group in the Democratic Party, which is why it's so unwieldy and why it's so distasteful to those who don't see everything in line with the far left wing of the party.
What, Michael, are they going to do with the vice president? I mean, this is a real conundrum for the Democrats, and there's no easy way out. I don't know if there is a way out.
No, that was the purpose of my column on Sunday, that, you know, the great line by Herb Stein, that if something can't go on forever, it will stop. Well, I don't know how the Biden administration goes on for three more years.
Yeah,
I mean, you have a declining president who isn't trusted by his own staff to take questions. You have to keep him hidden. And I mean, even today he was out there saying something that wasn't true about his trip to Israel in 1967. He was in law school when he was supposedly representing the United States, he said. I mean, he's in law school. So that sort of thing, I mean, it's like every time he gives a speech, you have to clarify it. And then, as we said about Kamala Harris, what kind of plan B does she represent when nobody thinks she's doing anything worthwhile? She can't get along with her own staff. She and the president are reportedly at swords. So you have to ask, how does this administration, with this low approval rating, a declining president, and a failing vice president, and very narrow margins in both chambers of Congress, which it's likely to lose, inflation running wild, being tested by our adversaries around the globe, Russia, China, Iran, how does this administration make it to the next election in 2024, let alone the idea that Joe Biden would run again? I mean, is there a soul on the face of the earth who really believes that?
Oh, I certainly don't. You know, one of your columns, I want to go back to COVID here just a little bit. We have this panic that is running amok right now because three people in this country have the sniffles from this other variant. But look, I've taken this pandemic very seriously from the start. You have, and this would, I think, come as a surprise to a lot of people in this country. You have more people who died this year from COVID than last year. Now, I'm not blaming President Trump or Joe Biden, but you know damn well that if the media was doing what they did a year ago with President Trump, that story would be plastered all over the place, that more people have died under this administration than the last. I don't really think it's relevant playing the blame game like that, but we know that there would be a double standard with the CNNs of the world, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. It would be front page story. The death, as it was under Donald Trump, the death toll was a story. It was a story once a week, twice a week, once
Absolutely.
A month, whenever it passed some kind of milestone, 100,000,
right.
Yeah. 200,000. I mean, it is a remarkable thing when you think of it, Mark, because we did not have vaccines except for the very last few days of Donald Trump. But here we are. We've had vaccine on massive scale the entire time Joe Biden has been president. How are the deaths up? I mean, that there's something about it that doesn't quite square. I mean, you would think the vaccines make no difference, or is it only the unvaccinated who are dying? I mean, there's something about it that still isn't clear.
No, and I think that there's so much confusion around all these issues because of the way this whole started with misinformation and different claims that no one, look, I don't know what to believe anymore. I don't know if I should be worried about the variant or not worried about the variant. I really don't.
You know, I was telling a friend years ago when I was younger and far more liberal, I got a copy of the National Review for the first time. And I read it, and I said, oh, my God, if any of this is true, we're in trouble. You know, that's sort of how I feel now when I read the New York Times. If this is true, but then, of course, is it true?
Well,
I mean,
that's right.
The National Review was, but this is not.
Yeah, well, I don't trust a lot of the information. There's no doubt about that. What was your impression? It was a fascinating day at the Supreme Court yesterday. What was your impression of those arguments? And what do you think the implications will be in next year's elections if this is overturned, if Roe v. Wade is overturned?
That's really an unknown. I mean, I just think it would obviously be a huge event, and that the Democrats would certainly think that for them it would be a winner. I'm not sure. I mean, I think that the country is really split on this issue, and I think to me the sort of most popular position. I don't think it's a majority, but it may be a plurality, which is people believe that there should be some path for abortions, but limited and narrow, as Bill Clinton used to say, right? Limited, legal, and safe, or something like that. But that's been blown away by these 9 months, you know, even live births can be aborted in some of these states. And so I think that what's happened with a lot of our, I think, policies and social constructs in this country is that the Democrats have gone so far that they've created a reaction. And had they not gone so far, you would not have had such a strong reaction. And I think abortion is one of those things. I think these issues heated up when you had the governor of Virginia at the time saying, you know, we'll keep the newborn comfortable and then have a conversation. I mean, that's horrifying. I mean, that's infanticide. And that's what he was talking about. And so I think those sorts of things have fueled this fire for a lot of people. And we, you know, if we can get some kind of understanding about safe, legal, and rare, I think we would be better off. But those days now seem to have receded far from where we are.
Michael Goodwin from the New York Post. Always great to have you on here in St. Louis. Michael, with your thoughts, I appreciate it. And we'll talk again soon, I'm sure.
My pleasure.
All
thank
right.
you, Mark.
Take care. That was awesome. 5:18. I want to get just to a little audio here. We were talking about Kamala Harris. You know, she has another staff member, Simone Sanders, who's leaving her office. And just listen to the end of the exchange here, because it's awkward.
I love Simone, and I can't wait to see what she will do next. And I know that it's been been 3 years of a lot of jumping on and off planes and going around the country, and she works very hard, and I can't wait to see what she'll do next.
And
I mean that sincerely.
There's obviously others as well. Do you feel like you're in the middle of a staff shakeup, and do you see this as a reset for your office?
So the question is, do you see this as a reset for your office? Are you in the middle of a staff shakeup? The answer is yes, I am in the middle of it, but here's what she says.
Well, I've told you how I feel about Simone. Yeah. Next question.
Wow.
That's a non-answer. Here is my old buddy from Wisconsin, Reince Priebus, on that.
Caterers are the first ones out. If you're on the comm staff and your numbers are in the tank, hey, the comm staff's not doing a good job. They're not telling your story. You know, no mention of the fact that Kamala Harris is giving completely bizarre interviews.
That's good.
I mean, that's true. You've been all around the country, have you, except to the border.
Yeah, except for where she should go.
Yep.
And then, I have this option for cut of the day, but I'll just get it in here now with Whoopi Goldberg going crazy on The View.
Do any of you men have any eggs or the possibility of carrying a fetus? How dare you talk about what a fetus wants?
All right, now I got to stop right here, because this is an example, an extreme example, and I am triggered this afternoon because Whoopi Goldberg just told me that men don't have ovaries. Wait a second here.
That's what I've heard.
She just told me that men can't. Did she just say that men can't reproduce?
She pretty much almost.
How transphobic of her.
I think this issue has vexed us for the entirety of the three of our lifetimes. I mean, since literally shortly after we were born, this issue has kind of dominated and divided the country. So I don't think an oral argument the last 90 minutes is going to resolve it. The issue is this. I mean, I want you to imagine a continuum from conception to birth.
All right, so this is good. This is Trey Gowdy. I should have introduced him, but this is former Congressman Gowdy.
And you have two competing constitutional issues, the autonomy or liberty of the woman and the life interest of the child. And they're both traveling down this continuum, and they intersect, they bisect. The issue then becomes, who reconciles those competing interests? Is it done by 9 people wearing black robes, or is it done by 90 million people at the ballot box? Clearly, you can't ban all abortions, and clearly, you can't engage in infanticide. So those are the two bookends. How you balance those interests in the interim, some people think that's a judicial issue, and some people think it's a political issue, and that's what I heard yesterday, that division.
Yeah, I heard that division, too. You heard it from the members of the court on the left. You heard it from John Roberts, the Chief Justice, as well. We're going to talk about the Beatles with my next guest, Tim Sommer, journalist, former record executive, contributor to the Rock and Roll Globe website. But I found out this morning on Facebook that you had a dream about Britney Spears, so we have to explore that, Mr. Sommer, before we get started here this afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Before we begin, I want to say two things, two very, very important things. First of all, what kind of world do we live in where Trey Gowdy makes so much sense? That's weird.
I knew you were listening. You know, it's so funny because you're like one of the guests that samples the show before you come on, which I appreciate.
Oh, I listen for an hour before I go on. And that's why the second important thing I have to say, listening to your show that I've learned, is for the love of God, stay off of Northbound 270.
Thank you.
Oh my God,
right?
Tim, you are so right.
Oh, I think he is right about them. Northbound 270 is never really a place
so right
to go. All right, so tell me quickly about the Britney Spears dream. Was this real?
Well, yeah, it was actually. You know, I have to be frank and say that it was really it was a dream where she called me from her hotel suite. I was rushed to her hotel suite in the hopes that I could give her. She was having some kind of nervous collapse. And I just gave her some instruction about how to stop, about the relationship of our souls to ourselves.
Well,
that's really
you.
What I did, is as I explained to her that our whole life is built of myths and stories. And that's very interesting. I say that because that applies a lot to what I think we're going to talk about with the Beatles. Our whole life is myths and stories. And we use these stories. We use events that have happened to us. We pick and choose from all the different things in our life to support how we're going to act or the way we feel, or we think, oh, I'm always persecuted, or I'm always happy, or this person's always angry at me, or this thing always goes well for me, or this thing always goes badly for me. And it's all based on the myths and stories that we pick and choose out of all the different rooms in all the years of our life. And you know what? If we begin to leave those rooms behind, if we begin to stop believing in the myths and stories of our own life and our own selves that we've held on to for so many years, we can be free in a certain way. And that's what the dream was about. I was summoned to give that advice to Ms. Britney Spears.
Was her dad in the dream or not?
No, he wasn't.
Oh, good. All right. Well, let's segue. I can't wait to hear your candid and honest conversation here about Get Back, because I'm through episode one and I'm quite fascinated. But one of the things that I said yesterday as a caveat, Tim, is that it's a slog. And I think for most people, if you're looking for riveting entertainment, that's not what this documentary is. But as a music guy and as someone who is just fascinated by seeing this creative process,
sure,
I've really enjoyed it so far.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because I think anyone I'll tell you something. The Beatles story as a band, and this is not that important. Well, it is important. The Beatles story as a band is not that unique. Meaning, I could pick I could just take a hardcore punk band that formed in Athens, Ohio in 1982 and made one album and put out 2 singles, and their origin story and their story as people and their disillusion story would be probably as interesting as the Beatles. The Beatles story as people coming together to form a band, growing together to people, and then beginning to grow apart, that story is fairly common. That story has happened not to thousands, but to millions of young artists. So that's not what's interesting about it. What's interesting about it in a deep way is that we're watching it. We're watching it with the Beatles, who are, and I'm going to use this word for the second time in the conversation, who are one of the fundamental myths of our life. And we may not realize that. And I think that's a good thing. And I think we should come to terms with that. And I'm going to ask you to think about the Beatles. And I mean specifically you, Mark, and your listeners. I'm going to ask you to think about the Beatles in a different way than you've ever thought about the Beatles. Think about when you're a child or when you watch your own children. When you're a child, you go from blocks and mobiles hanging above your crib. You go from blocks and mobiles to dinosaurs and ballerinas. Like you become fascinated by dinosaurs. You become fascinated by cranes when you're 2 or 3 years old, 2 or 3 or 4 years old. And then you say, Daddy, I want to be a fireman. Mommy, I want to be a ballerina. These are common steps for any kids.
Yeah, and I'm an idiot. I wanted to be a disc jockey. That was where I went wrong. But
Well, we all have these stages where we begin to say, I need to know everything about dinosaurs, Daddy. I need to know everything about ballerinas and fairies, Mommy. And then the Beatles come into our life. And the Beatles take the place of the next great myth. Now, I would never compare the Beatles to religion, except in the sense that they are one of the great myth stories of our life. So what you have in Get Back is, for a lot of people, especially people our age, middle-aged people and people in late middle age, what you have with Get Back is you have these 8 hours we can spend deep in the minds and deep in the hearts of one of the major myth stories of our life. Because I think the fact is, as extraordinary, as exemplary, as influential as the Beatles' music is, the prime role they play in our lives and in the lives of millions and millions, perhaps even billions of people, is their myth. They are the myth that we grew up with. They are the myth that taught us about rock and roll. I'm going to tell you a little more about that, then I want to hear about your story with the Beatles.
By the way, some of those myths are getting blown up in Get Back, aren't they?
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that's a good thing. I think, for instance, and I know this may not be that popular opinion, it's important to have a serious reappraisal of Yoko Ono. Yoko Ono is not a villain.
That's one of the things I was going to bring up, because it's funny, because she kind of just sits there for a lot of this, but doesn't seem like she's creating a lot of problems, right?
That's exactly right.
Yes.
That is exactly right. And you know what? Yoko Ono was a powerful artist, and God bless John Winston Ono Lennon for wanting someone in his life that he could look at as a peer. Because remember, Yoko Ono would have been a famous artist, not necessarily an artist that the whole world would have heard of, but a good cult artist. Yoko Ono would have been famous if she had never met John Lennon. She was already in Greenwich Village on the Lower East Side in the important avant-garde art movements of the late 1950s and early 1960s. She was already a very well-known name in New York and in London.
I don't have that perspective. That's interesting.
I don't either.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
She was a very well-known name. I mean, in a cult circle, in the same circle that, say, the Velvet Underground came out of, or that John Cage came out of, or that, you know, artists like that came out of. In the avant-garde circles of New York City, she was a well-known artist, and she would have stayed well-known. I'm going to tell you something about Yoko Ono. She didn't need to meet John Lennon. John Lennon needed to meet her. John Lennon needed to meet her to validate his own vision of himself as a unique figure, as someone who wasn't Paul McCartney, as an artist. And again, what you see in Get Back is you see someone who is not breaking up the Beatles, but merely witnessing the Beatles.
I want to ask you, because something made me sad this week, and I don't know the backstory, and you posted something on Facebook about Mal Evans. Mal Evans is featured in Get Back. He was a roadie. And in episode one, he's having some pretty in-depth conversations with Paul just about, I can't remember what song he's writing at the time, but there's, you know, input that he's giving. But you said something,
Road, yeah.
You said something about him not even, no Beatle went to his funeral when he died in 1976?
Well, it's interesting. Mal Evans, I think, you know, and this, again, is not uncommon. I don't want to single the Beatles out for that and for this, and that's important. Mal Evans was extraordinarily important to the Beatles. Now, as we move on into the 1970s and 1980s, 1990s and beyond, bands have road crews and organizations around them that are, you know, like, take a band like, name anybody, the Eagles, whoever. You name any active band, actually, the Eagles is a bad example since they're not that active. Any active band okay, Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, Iron Maiden, any U2 is a good example. U2 at any given time probably have 30, 40, maybe 80 people on the payroll full time. You have whole organizations.
Yeah, it's a corporation, right?
Yeah, that's right. The Beatles were not that case. On a day-to-day basis, the people working for them in the 1960s probably could have been who were on salary, probably could have been counted on one hand. Mal Evans, what you see in the Get Back film, is you see how important Mal Evans was to the Beatles, that he kept them running, that he inspired them, that he bought them tea, that he probably got them taxis, he booked them hotel rooms, God knows what else. He was obviously extremely important to him, to them. Now, when he died, George Harrison sent the family £5,000, which was a lot of money in those days. It probably transfers out into about $50,000 in today's money. But yeah, no Beatles came to his funeral, and admittedly, it's possible that if any of the Beatles had come to his funeral, it would have been, you know, a tremendous, you know, kerfuffle, and would have
spectacle.
Spectacle. Thank you.
I just didn't know about him, and I thought it was interesting because he is a big part, and I'm only through episode one. It's amazing. I have so many different things that I found curious about this, just watching Paul and seeing the lack of tension as he's, you know, they're in this weird room trying to film all this, and he's being very, very calm. And George, the sensitivity, and I think we've always known this about George Harrison, but the sensitivity that you see with George and Ringo, I guess I would say, throughout this is really interesting to me as well.
I think what's interesting about bands in general, and I think going back to the myth idea, so many bands compare their arc, meaning A-R-C, arc, their arc of history, their arc in artistic history, to what the Beatles did. They say, well, the Beatles were together for 10 years and they broke up. Gee, I guess it's about the amount of time a band should be together. The Beatles, oh, put these kind of songs on the album. They put a couple of ballads, a couple of rockers, a couple of weird songs. We'll do the same things. The Beatles created the template for how rock bands and pop bands were supposed to act. Now, that's changed a lot in the years since, largely thanks to the rise of country, to the rise of rap music, all of which play by different rules. But getting back to where we were, I'll tell you something interesting about the Beatles. When they break up, how old are they? 27, 28,
Yeah, they're only about 28, 29, right.
Yeah. I think the mistake the Beatles and a lot of bands make is not thinking to themselves, huh, we're 28 years old, need a couple of years away from each other, do our own projects, go live in the south of France for a few years, and maybe we'll do something else. I mean, it's like you don't leave a job just because you're becoming a bit disgruntled. I think bands, even the most artistic bands, like the Beatles, needed to realize we can take a step back from this, but we are an important business. We are an important group of artists. I'll relate it to
because I don't even know the history, but you could probably say maybe not though. I'll get your reaction to this. But if John Lennon had not died when he did, it's still not likely the Beatles would have ever gotten back together again, right?
I think because of the weight of expectation would have been so strong in them, I don't think they would have. I'll tell you something, and I'm going to give you a good analogy here, which I think will make a lot of sense to you. Families. Any family, your family, my family, anybody's family. I don't know who else is in the room with you, but their families too. A family goes, oh, God, I'm really pissed off at Uncle Edward. I can't talk to him for a few years. You go, you know what? I lent my brother money 2 years back, and he still hasn't paid me back. That gets me angry. But families don't break up, do they? Not really. Not in any real sense. Maybe your family never...
Sometimes
they do. They do. But generally, families don't break up. The Beatles, I wish they had seen that they were a family. You know, and I wish that they had stayed together and just said, hey, we're a family. Maybe we need a couple of years apart. I mean, sorry to jump to this example because it is something that I'm professionally involved with. My friends Hootie and the Blowfish. In 2008, they decided, huh, we're a family. We need a couple of years apart. We're not breaking up. We're still going to go to each other's kids' birthday parties. We're still going to play a gig or two every year for our friends, just for our friends at golf tournaments and charity events. But we're going to just set this aside for a few years and live our lives. And then 9 years later, or 10 years later, or 11 years later, they get back together and they have a great, great time and a great tour. I wish more bands, and I wish the Beatles, had been able to look at each other and say, John, Paul, George, Ringo, maybe even including Linda, maybe even including Yoko, including Mal Evans, whoever, including Derek Taylor, who was their very famous publicist, if they had gone, hey, we're family, need a few years apart, but let's stay this together. And I think what you see in Get Back is a family coming apart. Yeah. But it is a family.
Are you through all three? Have you watched all three? 8 hours plus?
Honestly, no.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough even for me. But and again, I want to warn people that are thinking they're going to get into something that they can't turn off. You have to have some patience. You have to pay attention. You have to really be appreciative of what you're watching.
It is
a wonderful
story of what bands are like.
You know what's interesting, Tim, is I never was until probably the last 15 years super into the Beatles, because I was more of a Zeppelin, Rolling Stones guy, and I always had appreciation for the Beatles, don't get me wrong, but I've become more fascinated, and I'm just telling you, I'm watching this thing in amazement with my jaw dropped, watching Paul McCartney do what he's doing so relaxed in coming up with the most recognizable songs that we've ever heard in some cases.
Right. So. It is something. It's an organic skill of his. That's not something you can tweak. It's not something you can learn. But I think if you were to ask me why is everyone talking about the Beatles again, I would say because there are only three, literally three. That's the fingers on one hand minus two, three. There are three artists in our history, rock pop artists, who have ascended to the level of myth, and that's Beatles, Elvis, and Dylan. Maybe you can throw Frank Sinatra in there.
I'd probably throw Sinatra in there. But you're right. It's a limited.
And by myth
membership,
I mean that not only is their music something that can be examined and enjoyed by generation after generation, and parsed apart and analyzed and written about, or just listen to casually and enjoyed.
Right.
Not only that, but their careers became the template for an entire industry, for how every other singer who ever stood in front of a mic with a piano player or a horn player in back of them, Sinatra somewhere in their head. Any other singer who stands in front of a mic and sweeps back their hair and hears a rockin' beat in back of them, Elvis is somewhere in their head. And every single band, even if they're a hardcore punk band, even if they're ABBA, even if they're the Eagles, every band that stands on stage with guitars and looks at each other and looks at their amplifiers has the Beatles somewhere in their head. And every singer-songwriter has Bob Dylan somewhere in their head. And I think, and this is the key thing, that's why Get Back matters to us so much.
I can't wait to watch the rest of it. It's going to take me a little while. Tim Sommer, always great to have you on. I appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
I don't know, no Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring.
Well, in a couple of weeks here, we're going to do a little bit of Christmas bumper music. I have my favorites, but I'm playing this because this is someone who might be best known as the Big Ragu, Eddie Mecca, who has passed away. So aww. Who is Eddie Mecca? I think if you're of a certain age, and Dave, you are not of a certain age.
I know Laverne and Shirley. I don't know this guy, though.
He was Shirley's boyfriend, Carmine, and he always was so sweet. So, yeah, that's who he was. He was the Carmine and Laverne and Shirley, and that was in 1976.
He won a Tony Award, so he had some chops. Singing Rags to Riches. So, I don't know if I've seen him in anything since 1983, but obviously I remember the character very well from Laverne and Shirley. So
I always loved him. I just thought he was so nice.
We have, that's what people say about me all the time.
Is it?
It's kind of embarrassing, really.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Right.
No, it's never been said. I could share another story, something that reminded me of something that happened today, but I will digress. So we have a Reardon Roundtable tomorrow with Jane Duker. We're breaking in a newbie, Dave. I'm excited. TJ Moe's going to be here, former Mizzou wide receiver. He's a bit politically opinionated, so
I'd
give him a spin on the roundtable, and we'll break him in tomorrow. Also, Dan Buffa on movies. I've been seeing for the first time in like 2 years. I'm trying to catch up on some movies because technically I'm supposed to vote on some things here in a couple of weeks.
Come on!
So I've watched a fair amount of movies that are pretty good, really. So we'll get into that tomorrow with Dan Buffa in the 4 o'clock hour. Is Cusimano back with us tomorrow? He skipped us.
He
on
should
Monday.
Be. Yeah, okay. he's back in town today, I believe.
Okay, awesome.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Cut of the day is sponsored by The Sound Room right next to Amini's in the Chesterfield Valley, the home of the Sony triple digit, the big 100-inch TV. It's amazing. It's on display right now at The Sound Room. They're online at thesoundroom.com. I have to go with Ducey and Psaki today. Now, you're going to hear Jen Psaki's answer. I probably should fast forward to it because there is a mic drop moment at the end from Ducey.
Big cities are dealing with smash and grab robberies. A record number of police officers have been shot and killed this year. What is President Biden going to do about all this lawlessness?
One, the president proposed additional funding in his budget over the funding that had been proposed by the prior president to increase and support local police departments, make sure we keep cops on the beat, and we ensure that local communities are working in partnership to crack down on crime and any dangers they see in their community. We've also worked with a range of communities across the country on strike forces, as you know, something we've talked about in the past. We're continuing to implement that from the Department of Justice, but the president absolutely believes that community police forces can have an important instrumental effect in helping keep communities safe.
Does the president still think that crime is up because of the pandemic?
I think many people have conveyed that, and also root causes of crime in communities is guns and gun violence, and we've seen that statistically around the country.
Wait for it.
So when a huge group of criminals organizes themselves and they want to go loot a store, a CVS, a Nordstrom, a Home Depot, until the shelves are clean, you think that's because of the pandemic?
I think a root cause in a lot of communities is the pandemic, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Keep going
okay.
with that. Jen, right. See how that works out for you. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3 at Reardon Roundtable. Have a great night.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.